Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Make some martial arts.
The best.
Let's
version
go,
of it.
Baby. Let's go. What is up, my friends? Thank you so much for joining us here on this Thursday. We're switching things up a little bit. Hope you're having a wonderful day out there. We have a very, very busy weekend this week, so we're coming at you a little early. A little Thursday action. Welcome to your weekend preview here on MMA Fighting. My name is Sean Oshadi, and I'm joined by the crew. You know them. Let me bring them in. We have the man with the best tattoos in MMA media, but also maybe MMA period. I think he actually just got himself some new ink this week. It's my Arizona brother, Jose Youngs.
What's up, boss?
Got the Lord of the Hot Take himself, Jed K. Mashu, joining us as well. Can't say his name.
And hey, guys. And then
the legend, Damon Martin. Getting in on some preview show action as well. You got to love it. And of course,
you say best tattoos. You don't only talk about my Infinity Gauntlet. Jeez, man.
Hey, man. I'll let you.
And I had no idea you had that.
And then, oh, of course, the undefeated EK's related man in the boards from the producer's desk.
Yeah, when you said best tattoos, I was going to cut away to Damon, but I realized we had a little rivalry on staff. So, jeez.
There's no rivalry. It's just facts.
Look at that. I like that. And thank you to you all as well for joining us. We're going to field your questions, comments later on in the show. But let's get rolling, fellas, because we have a lot to get to. It's a doubleheader this weekend. UFC Vegas 51 and Bellator 277. You have Bilal Muhammad versus Vicente Luque on one side, two title fights. On the other side, AJ McKee, Patricio Pitbull 2, Corey Anderson, Vadim Nemkov with $1 million on the line there. So I'm going to throw it to you first, Jose. The question is simple. Set the table for us. 28 fights between these two events, 2 days in a row. What's the best card of the weekend, and what's the single best fight of the weekend for you?
The answer is both Bellator 277, and it's not because the main event of the UFC Vegas 51 isn't great. Like, it's a rematch between Vicente Luque and Bilal Muhammad. That fight is awesome, especially for the welterweight division, which is obviously kind of in the headlines right now, especially at the top of the division. And these two, I think, have been kind of the dark horse for so long because they've been slowly and violently racking up wins. But the answer is Bellator 277. I mean, we all talked about it. Like, when AJ McKee fought Patricio Pitbull the first time, everyone kind of billed that as the biggest fight in Bellator history against the two best fighters in the history of that promotion. So now they're running it back. AJ McKee obviously has never fought anywhere but Bellator, and he's also never lost against Patricio Pitbull, who I consider to be, if you take into all the accolades and everything, he's either 1 or 1B with McKee as the greatest fighters in the history of that promotion. And then Vadim Nemkov and Corey Anderson. I think Vadim Nemkov, he could be the best light heavyweight in the world. We don't know because he's not fighting. There's no cross promotion. Obviously, you're perhaps a glove chair going to be fighting in a couple months in Singapore, but Vadim Nemkov, Fedor's protege, is an horrifying human being who puts people through a meat grinder, and then they come out looking like disgusting, bloody, raw meat at the end of their fights. Corey Anderson has been talking all that greasiness. He's looked like a man possessed since leaving the UFC. So if we're talking storylines, high-level martial arts, interest in terms of the diehard fan base, I think Bellator 277 checks all the boxes. That's not to say the main event for UFC rules, just the rest of that card, not great, if we're being honest.
What do you think, Jed? Because I'm Jose, if I'm being honest,
You're right on all accounts there. For me, it's Bellator. This is a Bellator week. It's rare that we get a week where Bellator is the dominant card over the UFC. But to me, it's happening right now. And AJ McKee and Pitbull is the fight. If you had to pick one fight among all these, Jed Damon, Jed, you first. Do you guys agree? Is this a Bellator week?
Sure. I think everything Jose said is correct. Like,
oh man, that was unenthusiastic.
It's because everything Jose said is like fundamentally accurate, but also, does a Bellator card happen if nobody knows it's happening? Because nobody knows this is happening or cares about it at all, which is great. Honestly, it actually makes sense. It's a very fitting follow-up to the biggest fight in Bellator promotional history, which was McKee Pitbull 1. They have let McKee Pitbull 2 just kind of happen in silence because for whatever reason, like, I don't know. This should be a card we're stoked about because honestly, there's a lot of other competitive, interesting fights going on this Bellator card. I know Aaron Pico was originally going to fight, I think, Kennedy, right? But Aaron Pico is still going to work. Tim Johnson, Linton Vassell are two of their top heavyweights. That mileage may vary there, I agree. But there are other things going on outside of the two fights, which I think Jose was nailed it. Like, these are the two best fights of the weekend. I think Vadim Nemkov, Corey Anderson is my pick for the best fight this weekend. It's the most relevant fight. It is my number two versus number three light heavyweight going to battle. And I will be frank, if Vadim Nemkov wins convincingly, he's probably going to move to my number one light heavyweight in the world after this fight. These are all things that should matter. And I cannot find it in me to be that pumped because it doesn't feel like Bellator's that pumped. Like, it does not feel like they care about this even. And maybe I'm wrong. I'd love it if you guys, you know, could convince me otherwise. But it really feels like Bellator is just kind of in cruise control on life now and that they aren't excited about bringing fights to us, even fights that are this big and important. And so, you know, this is a Bellator weekend for quality. But at the end of the day, like, I think – I certainly expect the UFC, as meager as it is, to still do more numbers than Bellator will.
Damon, get in here, man. Do you agree with everything Jed's saying there? I mean, what's the sense you're getting heading into this?
I mean, Bellator's got the better card, but, you know, I'm kind of with Jed on the whole, you know, if a Bellator card is happening and no one's around to watch it, did it actually happen? Because that's kind of the feeling with Bellator these days. But I will disagree on the best fight of the weekend. Listen, I love AJ McKee and Pitbull. I was super excited about the first fight. Ended in 2 minutes. Will the second one go that way? I doubt it, but I am still excited for it. And I actually am really looking forward to Corey Anderson, Vadim Nemkov, because, you know, the argument is there. The winner of that fight is the number one light heavyweight in the world. You can't forget Corey Anderson trucked Glover Teixeira when he fought him in the UFC, and Vadim Nemkov has been on an incredible run. But I think the best fight of the weekend really is the main event in the UFC. And I say that because, you know, I've said it many times, Vicente Luque is the second most exciting fighter in the world right now behind only Justin Gaethje. I mean, that guy just does not put on boring fights. You know, he starched Bilal Muhammad in, you know, whatever it was, like a minute 20 the last time out. Bilal has looked really good lately, beating Wonderboy, beating Damian Maya, you know, high profile wins right there. And listen, Vicente Luque's fighting. I don't care if he's fighting Randy Brown, he's fighting Nico Price, he's fighting Mike Perry. Anywhere he's at, I'm going to watch that fight. So in terms of guaranteed excitement, I want to watch Vicente Luque. So that's my favorite fight of the weekend. Plus, you know, it's two pretty high ranked guys in the UFC. And even though neither one of them is going to get a title shot right now, you know, it does set up some potentially good fights in the future, depending on what happens and what shakes out over the next couple months. So I still like that one the best because Luque's fighting. I'm guaranteed a fun fight.
It's fair. I mean, let's dive into it, Damon, because, I mean, Jose, you spoke a bit about it. I want to start with UFC this week because, you know, it is UFC, and ultimately we do know that more people will care about this fight than the Bellator fight, even if the Bellator card is better. Jose, I mean, you know me. I'm the biggest Vicente Luque guy out there. I've been driving this bandwagon for a long time now. But I hesitate to call this more than a one-fight card. Like, is this generally what we're looking at on Saturday? Is this a one-fight card to you?
Yeah, this, like, on paper, just looking at it, this reads more like a Dana White Contender Series fight card. Like, there are interesting names. Like, I think Miguel Baez is awesome, and he's had two back-to-back losses, but his fight against Santiago Ponzinibbio that he lost, that was one of my top five fights of last last year. And then he just got caught. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Chaos Williams or someone. He just got caught at the end. So still an exciting young guy. At one point, you know, he was kind of viewed as one of these top contenders. And then like Dracar Close is on it. Jordan Levitt's always an interesting cat. Kevin Kroom. Like these are all interesting guys and interesting names, but there's no real marquee fight between two people outside of the top five. Yeah, I know Miguel Baez and Andre Fiallo is a great fight, but it's not like that would still kind of be a weak co-main event. This is every definition of a one fight card. and compared to Bellator, like that whole main card is interesting.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, we lost a couple of big fights here, right? Like Uriah Hall, Andre Muniz was supposed to be on this. That would have been nice to have. Zaleski Dos Santos fell off of this. That would have been fun with against Monil Aziz. So, you know, there was other things on there. But Damon, I mean, when you – or I'm sorry, Jed, let's go to you first. I mean, this welterweight division right now is in a very curious place for the UFC, right? Like you have Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman. That seems to be a foregone conclusion at this point. You have Hamzat Shamayev coming off last weekend. Colby Covington is what the UFC is pushing for. Who knows if that'll get booked, if Colby will accept it. But that seems to be, assumedly, a number one contender type of shot for Hamzat Shamayev. And then you have these guys, Bilal Muhammad, Vicente Luque. They're kind of the odd man out right now. What do you feel like is actually at stake on Saturday?
I think a lot's at stake because I think they have a really good chance to make this be a one away from a title eliminator. Like, sure, the UFC and Dana White are pushing for Khamzat versus Colby. I would strongly discourage Colby from accepting that fight were I in his corner. I think Colby should make the move to middleweight and try and do that whole thing. I think he should, more importantly, should try and do everything he can to not fight Khamzat Chimaev, who would probably break his bones into little pieces and wear them about his neck like a necklace. So, I think Colby's not stupid and probably I don't think he wants that fight. I could be all the way wrong. Also, I'm not certain that if he even beat Khamzat, he'd get a title fight. Like, I think he could, certainly, but it seems like a lot of balls are in the air there. Whereas if I'm the winner of this Luque Muhammad fight, the only thing I do is I get on the mic and I just scream for Khamzat Chimaev. Like, okay, Khamzat Chimaev, I want you. Everybody's been ducking you, not me. You and me, title eliminator. Either man wins it. It's going to be Luque. Luque's going to win. But Luque comes out, screams for Chimaev. That puts him into a title eliminator because Chimaev versus anybody other than Colby Covington is a guaranteed title eliminator. Chimaev versus Covington is at least a one-way one. And I think Chimaev would take the fight. So I think there's a lot at stake here because I think they could absolutely talk themselves into getting that fight. Because also we've seen Colby Covington – repeatedly shoot himself in the foot over his whole career. So it's entirely possible that even if he did want the Khamzat fight, he would out-negotiate himself of it. And the winner of this fight's right there to get the opportunity. So I think there's a lot at stake, frankly.
Damon, I mean, I wonder, do you agree? Like, is there any chance, A, that the winner of this fight on Saturday will fight for a title next, or B, that they could actually end up being that next guy for Khamzat Chimaev that pushes him over the edge?
I mean, there's always an outside chance the winner gets a title shot only because Leon Edwards has the worst luck of any fighter in the history of the sport over the last couple of years. So there's a chance that, you know, maybe he gets injured and, you know, something weird happens and they, you know, Khamzat can't fight and they throw in, you know, a Luque to do something like that. So there's a chance. I mean, it's not a big chance, but there's a chance. But I agree with Jed in terms of the magnitude of this fight because, you know, everyone's talking about Colby and Chimaev. I don't disagree. I don't know that we're going to see that fight. I mean, sure, the UFC wants to make it, but the UFC wanted to make, you know, Colby and Woodley, you know, back in the day, and that fight fell apart. And then it ended up being Woodley and Usman and all that things happened. So there's no guarantee we're going to see Khamzat and Colby. Colby has done, you know, called out everybody but Khamzat. So the fact that that fight's proposed, great. Happening? Don't know. So, and you know, listen, don't forget, you know, Bilal Muhammad was offered Khamzat Chimaev for the headliner at UFC London, accepted it, fight didn't come together, they ended up switching things up, giving him Gilbert Burns, and he got Vicente Luque. Vicente Luque was also in that conversation. I talked to Vicente, 100% he would have fought Khamzat, jumped at the chance to fight Khamzat, still would fight Khamzat because he won't fight Gilbert Burns. Vicente will not fight Gilbert Burns under any circumstances, so I agree. The winner of this fight could potentially get a title shot. Again, that's a very slim chance. But getting Khamzat, I'd say there's actually a pretty strong chance that happens. And that is the quickest path to a title right now is to go through Khamzat. And that's a big fight for either one of these guys.
I mean, Jose, man, I think a lot of people don't realize or forget or anything like that. Like that, this is actually a rematch. Like we've seen this fight before. It was like what, I think 5 years ago, 6 years ago at this point.
It was a bit ago.
Yeah, UFC 205, if I'm not wrong. You have Vicente Luque out there. He won in 79 seconds. Not a lot you can glean from that quick knockout.
I mean, there's a lot you can glean.
Maybe, though. I feel like they're both very different fighters, or at least Bilal is to a certain extent at this point. 6 years is a long time. Who do you think has more to lose here on Saturday, Jose?
Ooh, I would say it's a good question. I would say in the eyes of the fans and probably the UFC, Bilal would have the most to lose solely because, as Damon said, I wouldn't put him number two most exciting, but I'm not going to argue. Like, I think we can all agree Justin Gaethje is the most exciting fighter on planet Earth, maybe ever. Vicente Luque is clearly top five. So we can all agree we don't care who Vicente Luque fights. We just want to see that man break brick on somebody. Bilal Muhammad, how many stoppage wins does he have in, like, since that loss to Vicente Luque? What does he have? One other loss? I know he lost to Jeff Neal, but other than that, I can't really think of any. I know he had the weird no contest because he got stabbed in the eye by Leon Edwards, what, like 10 seconds since. But other than that, he doesn't have a ton of stoppage wins. He's just kind of beating you up over three rounds like he did, you know, to Stephen Thompson, the Diego Limas, the Damian Mayas. There's not a lot of memorable singular moments in those fights. He's not going to fight of the year with Brian Barberena and then bowing to the crowd. And yeah, one stop is win. So a loss probably hurts him just in the eyes of the UFC because he's winning and it's not overly exciting. And if he loses, he'll probably be on the receiving end of something really violent a la Vicente Luque. So I'm going to say it's Bilal Muhammad, but again, he's top six welterweights in the world. So at worst, he's top 10, which is still not bad. Obviously, he could still rebound from this. But in the immediate future, Bilal Muhammad probably has more to lose solely because of his fighting style.
Jose, I just have to acknowledge the elephant in the room here. The chat's going wild for the fresh shaven look, this clean baby face look. People don't know how to accept this right now.
I have a beautiful face. I'm sorry. I didn't want to hide it behind a beard anymore. You guys can discuss in the comments. Maybe that can be a between the links topic.
Jose Younger says Callum Lambert. I love it. Jed, man, when you look at these two guys in terms of just styles and matchups, right? They're in the same type of spot just in terms of this division. But when you look at Vicente Luque, Bilal Muhammad, which of them is more likely, do you feel like, to break into that top three that we currently have going, a Kamaru, Colby, Hamzat, and actually like be competitive, like actually be somebody that can make a difference in there?
Luque, I think that's obvious, right? Like, look,
God, it doesn't sound like you're very high on Bilal. I'm not going to lie.
I love him. Great fighter. He is Neil Magny 2.0. Like, he is just going to be Neil Magny when Neil Magny retires. Like, or they're just going to concurrently be the Neil Magny guy who's really well-skilled, competitive, tough out for anybody, never going to fight for a title, and that's okay. Most people don't end up fighting for titles and can still make a quality career out of being one of the 10 best people in the world at their profession. That is a thing that we do not celebrate enough in this sport, frankly. Bilal Muhammad is one of those, but he is, I would be very surprised if he ever fought for UFC belt. I think winning against Luque is paramount to him doing that because otherwise I don't see him. I think a loss here sets him back probably further than Luque just because Luque is so dynamic and so exciting that a couple of wins can get him in the conversation. Whereas a loss here really puts Bilal like five wins back because he wins them all by quality decision. So, you know, I think Luque is the more dynamic, more exciting, more interesting fighter. I think he's the better fighter. I think he has much better offense. And those are the things that usually coincide with somebody making a real run towards the top three, towards a title fight, that kind of stuff. I'm not trying to denigrate Bilal Muhammad, but to me, it's just, he is not some rising prospect who we don't know the things about. Bilal's 33 years old. Like, we know the cake is baked. We know what kind of a fighter he is, and that fighter is damn good, but it's pretty clearly limited. And, you know, I think this is probably a round where he's capped as far as his upward mobility is.
I mean, David, I want to follow up with what Jed just said, man. I mean, when you look at Vicente Luque, I've seen some chatter about this all week just on social media and as people converse about these fights. Is Vicente Luque like a low key, very sneaky good matchup, do you think, for some of these top guys in this division? An Usman, Shamayev? Like, he doesn't really get thrown into that conversation a lot because he is just so quiet outside of the ring. But do you feel like the way he kind of like matches up with these guys actually would actually be better than some of the other matchups that were thrown around within these top three?
I mean, Luque is going to be fun no matter who he fights. I mean, that's kind of his style. He goes out there and has exciting fights with everybody. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine Vicente Luque and Khamzat Chimaev for as long as that fight would last? I mean, it would just be like two tornadoes colliding in the octagon. I mean, who wouldn't want to see that, you know? And I'm not saying that Vicente is going to go out there and starch, you know, Kamaru Usman. I don't think anyone's going to starch Kamaru Usman. But, I mean, come on. Like, Vicente Luque is just an exciting guy. He goes in there and has a war with Mike Perry. He goes in there and has a war with Nico Price. He goes in there and has a war with Michael Chiesa. And I like Michael Chiesa very much, but Michael Chiesa, very much in a lot of ways, kind of like Bilal Muhammad. He's not a guy who typically goes out there and, you know, puts on these blistering performances and gets these big finishes. The whatever 4 minutes that fight lasted was awesome because Vicente Luque makes every fight awesome. So I don't know what the ceiling is on Vicente because he is so freaking dangerous. I mean, you make one wrong move, he will knock you out. He will snatch you in a darce choke. He will put you away. So to say that there's a ceiling on him right now is tough because, you know, we just haven't seen him in a lot of those opportunities. Yes, he does have the loss to, you know, Wonderboy. He does have the loss to Leon Edwards early in his career. But again, anytime he's in there, it's going to be exciting. And you can't say with 100% certainty that if, you know, Usman ducked his head the wrong way or Khamzat, you know, goes for a takedown and doesn't get it, or they're just out there swinging, trading punches, that he can't beat anybody in that top five. I just refuse to believe that.
Jose, when you look at this now, let's make some picks because that's what we do here on this show. Who are you liking this? Because I mean, this is a fun matchup. I think we've sort of laid out the case of why it matters in this division. Who do you like?
The main event, Vicente Luque. I think who's he lost to? Steven Wonderboy Thompson and Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards is about to fight for the UFC welterweight title. I'm glad we all finally stopped pretending that Khamzat Chimaev was going to skip the queue. I was getting real agitated over that conversation. And then Steven Thompson, when he lost to him in Madison Square Garden, that was like peak Steven Thompson, or like right at the end of peak Steven Thompson before, like, you know, Bilal Muhammad and everyone has kind of been piecing him up lately. So he's only losing to the best of the best. I think Bilal Muhammad, as Jez said, is really damn good, but he's just Neil Magny. I think Vicente Luque beats Neil Magny right now too. So I just think Vicente Luque has more tools. He's more violent. He's more exciting. I'm not going to say his cardio is better because Bilal Muhammad has said that he can just go for rounds and rounds and rounds. And I haven't seen that, so I'm not going to comment on it. So I just think Vicente Luque is better across the board and more violent, and Bilal Muhammad is fantastic. He's just not on Vicente Luque's level right now. Fantastic analyst, though. I really, really like him on the ESPN desk. I think he's one of the more underrated color commentators, but like analysts when they kick it to him. So great guy, great fighter, great analyst. I just think Vicente Luque is better right now in the year of our Lord 2022.
Totally agree with you on the analyst thing. Like, I don't feel like he gets mentioned enough in regards to when we talk about the really great UFC analysts, but he's actually like surprisingly good at it, and he hasn't really had that many reps at it yet. So he seems like he could have a future there. Jed, I mean, your pick is the only way Bilal gets this done. Is this wrestling? Is that kind of what we're looking at?
Yeah, he's gonna have to do it for 25 if he wants it, and there's an avenue. I just don't think it's consistent. I mean, it just is what it is. Like to Damon's earlier point, like, I don't think Vicente Luque would go out there and clobber Kamaru Usman, but it's possible. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they fought and he managed to be the guy who did the violent thing and won. I think Bilal Muhammad could fight Kamaru Usman 100 times and he would lose 100 times. Like, that's just how this fight and how their styles work. Muhammad has to fight one way and he has to be really perfect for most of it, and at any point in time Luque can just do a hyper violent thing and blow his face off. Like, it's just all he can do. So I think he could win either a decision, or he could just knock him out in the first round again, or he could submit him. All of the world exists for Vicente Luque here, whereas Muhammad has to get takedowns and he has to sit on Luque for 25 minutes. So give me Luque by probably early KO.
Damon, you making it 3 for 3?
Yeah, I like Luque to win. I mean, I just have a hard time picking against him. He has the win already, and it's just, again, it's a matter of time with Luque. You're playing with dynamite for, you know, I know this is five rounds, but it's just playing with dynamite where he's eventually going to catch you. And, you know, he has so many great finishes. It's just hard to bet against him. I agree with everything Jed said about Bilal. I think Bilal is an incredible fighter. Also, to the analyst point, let me give him a shout out, a frequent co-host on Fighter versus Rider as well. He's broken down some fights with me on the show, and he's a phenomenal at that job. And you know what? And the thing is, it kind of breaks my heart a little bit because I think Bilal is really good. And I think there are guys that he, you know, got, I know the fight ended in a weird way, but I don't know that I'd pick against him in a rematch against Leon Edwards. And I mean that sincerely. Like, I don't know that he wouldn't beat Leon Edwards. And also to that point, I like Leon Edwards. Let me make this clear. I like Leon Edwards. Either Vicente Luque or Bilal Muhammad after Saturday night will have a more convincing win on their record than Leon Edwards has right now, because Leon Edwards has not fought anyone and beat anyone in the current top 10 in the welterweight division. None. Nobody. Zero. So it kind of breaks my heart that Bilal never got that fight back, because I think Bilal could beat him. I really do. But it's just Vicente, I think, is just on another level right now. Will Vicente beat Colby? Will he beat, you know, Khamzat? I don't know, but he has a chance. So, yeah, I like Vicente to get it done here. And, you know, in typical Vicente violent fashion.
So I mean, clear. I hate – no, go so for it, clear.
One, I want to apologize because I think Damon has been having to fight with me too much, and he has absorbed my hate for Leon Edwards, because I don't like Leon Edwards. I've been really honest about it. But I will give the man his due. He has beaten a man in the current top of the welterweight rankings. He's beaten Vicente Luque. So
that's what I was going to say. Yes.
He does have that win, and you can't take it away.
That's true.
I would also
have that. I've forgotten.
Yeah. I would pick him to beat Bilal in a rematch, because I thought that first fight looked very clear how the trajectory was going, but that's a whole different thing. But I'm glad that other people are getting on the Leon Edwards, let's bag on him, because it's a great train. A lot of opportunity for success in the future with that train.
Oh man, y'all are gonna be so sad when Leon pulls the upset of the century off on Kamaru Usman.
I will be stunned.
You're gonna have a lot of crow to eat.
I'll do it. I'll eat it. I will eat my hat.
You say that a lot. I haven't seen a lot of hat eaten, but I feel like you've had a couple ways you should have eaten your hat right now already.
Let me add something to this. I don't think I've ever seen Jed wear a hat, period. So
do you even own hats?
Yeah,
I mostly wear hats outside of us doing filming stuff. You guys want me to start wearing hats? I will wear hats.
Known liar, Jed Meshew makes up he owns hats. More at 12. Next question.
I am a known liar. That's also true. Oh, man.
Well, I hate to make it unanimous across the board because we have four people here and 4-4 is a little boring. But I mean, Jose, you know, I've been on the Vicente Luque train for years at this point. I can't hop off now. The boy's finally cresting. Like, people are finally paying attention. Like, this is his moment. This is the one window he's going to get, seemingly, where he has a chance to slip into this title picture. I think he's going to get it done just in the way you guys said. So let us move on.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And let's jump over now to Bellator, because as we said at the top, best card of the week, probably has the best fights of the week too, unless you're Damon and you disagree with that. But just in general, let's talk about AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull too, because when we saw this fight last summer and we saw AJ look what looked to be a star-making performance against Pitbull, it felt like this was the biggest layup for Bellator in a long, long time, right? Like, here's this guy, homegrown star. You've literally built him from the ground up. He matures into just this beast of a champion who knocks off the most decorated fighter in your promotion's history, does it easy. Like, it was nothing. in the perfect world, you give that man everything he wants, right? You give him the daytime talk show circuit. You put him in front of every microphone that'll have him. You book the rematch with Pitbull at lightweight for the lightweight title. Try to make this guy a two-division champion. And finally, you have someone who the fans are kind of actually invested in a way that maybe they haven't been since like the Alvarez-Chandler days for Bellator. Instead, we get AJ McKee sitting around for basically like a year. We didn't hear from him pretty much at all this entire time. All that momentum feels like it's completely gone. Patricio doesn't even have the lightweight belt anymore. And somehow we ended up running this same fight back at 145 a year later. So Jose, I throw it to you. I mean, what do you think about the way Bellator has handled this saga of AJ McKee since last July? And are you satisfied with where we've ended up now with this fight?
Nope, it's horrible. They've done a terrible job of promoting AJ McKee as a whole. The only thing they did well was they stuck him on the broadcast for one of the Jake Paul fights, which we all agreed was the move to make, especially because it was Showtime working hand in hand with all that. AJ McKee, what? I remember doing the post show after this, and at the time, Alex Savas, our coworker, someone asked her, because you know she works in a lot of the non-MMA world. She has a lot of fans that aren't in the MMA world. They had zero idea who AJ McKee was after his quote-unquote star-making performance. And I've used this analogy a few times. Sean, I don't think you've ever been on a show where I've brought this up. Paddy Pimblett had a million Instagram followers. He was 0-0, maybe 1-0 in the UFC. Got his Instagram taken away. Now he's back, I think, at 800,000 Instagram followers. And he has $1 million deal. And he got his teammate $1 million deal. AJ McKee has a little over 100,000 Instagram subscribers. And the same week that Paddy Pimblett signed a 7-figure deal with Barstool, AJ McKee had a hot dog named after him. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing, guys? Like, come on, bro. AJ McKee could be the best featherweight on planet Earth. And it doesn't help. Like, and everyone's saying, like, oh, why is he talking about the UFC? Why is he saying it's inevitable? Why is he tweeting about Alex Volkanovski? Well, give him a reason to want to stick around. Like, they're not giving. He said it best. He just won $1 million. What, you want him to take a 75% pay cut for a rematch? Come on, dog. Give him everything he wants and give him a reason to actually promote your product by giving him all. Like, it's tomfoolery. That's what it is. I'm not. It's unfortunate. And no, I'm glad. I'm happy the fight is happening. I would have liked it a lightweight for a second belt, like you said. But again, Bellator doesn't want to give us what we want. So now it's running it back in featherweight, which is just the second best fight I wanted to see AJ McKee have. And honestly, I want to see AJ McKee fight Aaron Pico still, and that's not even going to happen. Like, there's a bunch of fights I want to see AJ McKee have that aren't going to happen. And it just sucks. I don't care what promotion he's in. I'm not one of these guys that's like, oh, UFC versus Bellator. I just want to see that man fight fun fights and get paid very, very highly to do it. So no, in short, no, I am not happy with Bellator's nonsense and lack of promotion.
Sheesh, go off, Jose. I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, Jed, man, we have AJ out here now. I mean, Jose alluded to it a little bit. Like, AJ, in the lead up to this promotion, essentially, he's out here on the MMA Hour, just kind of openly flirting with the UFC, saying like UFC belts inevitable. I need like $1 million per fight, and that's going to double every time you don't give it to me. All of this on a scale of 1 to 10. How do you feel like Bellator has handled this last year with AJ? And do you feel like just a little bit, just maybe like a little bit conspiracy Sean out here, just a tiny bit, that they are not promoting this fight to the degree that they should because they are sort of worried about where this is going with AJ?
So before I get into that, I don't want to say anything, because you remember in old school when Will Ferrell makes that impassioned speech and the Raging Cajun is like, we have no response. It was perfect. That's me to Jose. He was perfect. Everything was absolutely spot on, and we really could just end here. But if you're going to make me join you with the conspiracy hat, I will join you readily, because that's absolutely a thing that they're doing. All I would say almost 100%. Maybe not in that specific terminology, but I think my interpretation of all of this is, one, I fundamentally believe Bellator stopped caring about their own product. Maybe I'm wrong, and prove it to me by promoting it worth a damn. But until you do, I'm just going to continue to say you guys just don't care. And that's okay. A lot of people don't care about their jobs, and they just do them because, you know, paycheck's paycheck. I'm not here to knock you. Get paid, kings. And Queens. But for me, they looked at the biggest fight of history in history and their promotional history. That was what they sold this as. And I don't know what they did from a numbers standpoint. but I remember the numbers from our end not being all that spectacular. And Jose alluded to it with Alex Savas and kind of the outside perspective. I think they looked at this thing that they thought was going to be a thing, and they realized, oh, Adrian McKee's actually not a star. Like, he has the makings of it, but he's not Conor McGregor, Paddy Pimblett. He's not that. And so, all right, we're just going to roll with it. And so I think they are not investing in him, because I think that they have already made the mental calculus that they cannot keep him. They currently have him under contract because that's how championship clauses work. But my reading of his experience on the MMA Hour is that dude is gone. The moment it is possible for him to leave, he is leaving. Say what you will about the $1 million. I think that's like me saying, you guys pay me $10 million and I'll do this. Like, I could say a billion. It doesn't matter if they're not going to do it. And he's just gone, and they know it. And so they're not going to get too juiced up in promoting him, because they know he's gone. They know that even if they tried to promote him, it's probably not going to yield tremendous results for him. And so they're just kind of spinning their wheels. Because look, I caught a lot of trash for this earlier this year when I wrote about it. AJ McKee is less of a star than Kayla Harrison, and they would not make an offer that Kayla Harrison could not refuse or that PFL couldn't match. So if they aren't going to unload the Brink truck for her, they aren't doing it for him either. So he's on a timeline. And so I think your conspiracy is correct. They're just not going to invest in a product that is going to leave them in the near future.
Damon, I'm interested to hear your thoughts here, because you were on the AJ McKee train very early. Like, I have been calling him the best non-UFC fighter in the world this week. But if you look at our MMA Fighting Global rankings, like, you were on AJ McKee way before I think a lot of us. And really, they're the only rankings in MMA that matter, if we're being honest. He on those rankings. He on those rankings right now is the top male pound-for-pound fighter outside of the UFC. So there is something to there. So I wonder, Damon, you've spoken with AJ ahead of this fight. You've spoken with him a couple times. Where do you feel like his head is at? Like, what sense do you get from him? And just, where is all this headed?
Well, let me tell you, it's weird, because when I spoke to AJ, it was right after the fight got announced. So it was about 6 weeks ago, five, 6 weeks ago. And at that time, he sounded pretty solid about, like, it sounded pretty confirmed that he was going to go back to Bellator. He seemed pretty resigned in that fact. Although, even back then, he said, you know, I feel like one day I'm going to be a UFC champion. Okay, that's great. 6 weeks later, when he talks to Ariel on the MMA Hour, he's more or less basically out the door. You know, he's saying, I want $1 million per fight. So somewhere in the negotiation, something went bad or something went sour to the point where he went from, he was saying, bring guys to me, bring guys to Showtime. I want to fight them over here. I want to, you know, go and do pay-per-view, blah, 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 to pay me $1 million or I'm leaving for the UFC. So something had to happen in negotiation where either he made a demand and Bellator turned him down, or something happened. Something had to have happened to change that relationship in that 6 week period. My guess is, in the middle of negotiations, he went too high, they went too low, there was no middle ground, and now here's where we're at. I think AJ could be the best featherweight in the world. I'm that high on this kid. I think he's phenomenal. I think he's got all the tools. Bellator has royally screwed up promoting him. There's no doubt about that. Again, let me echo what Jed said. Everything that Jose said was 110% correct. I couldn't say it any better, so I'm not going to try. That being said, AJ is an incredibly talented kid. The only thing that worries me here about this whole scenario is AJ is setting himself up for either a big moment to go to the UFC and prove himself, which, by the way, I love you, AJ. Think you're a star in the making. Think you might be the best featherweight in the world. But you might want to lower your expectations when you sit down to negotiate with Hunter Campbell in the UFC, because if they offer you $100K and $100K, you'll be lucky. That being said,
facts.
AJ is one bad move away from his stock dropping to, I won't say zero, not zero, but stock dropping dramatically. Because if he goes out and gets starched by Pitbull, now I don't think he will. I think he's going to win. I know we're going to get to picks, but I think, you know, AJ wins. But Pitbull's capable of doing that. Pitbull is capable. He did it to Michael Chandler. He's done it to a lot of people. He goes out there and gets starched. He becomes a free agent, you know, right away, because the championship clause is gone. But he also has zero leverage at that point. And the $100K offer I just kind of joked about probably drops, like, here's your Paddy Pimblett contract. We're going to make it 24 and 24. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, so AJ's got a lot of pressure, because he's already basically saying, I'm going to go to the UFC. But if he loses, where's his power to actually demand anything at that point? I mean, will the UFC pick him up? Sure, they probably will. But, you know, he's now at this point there, you know, he's going to be lucky to draw. Yeah, they're going to say, hey, Dan Hooker, we got a fight for you. His name's AJ McKee. He's coming over from Bellator. They're not going to throw him into a title fight at that point, much less a number one contenders fight. So a lot of pressure on AJ this weekend.
Tremendous points. Tremendous points there, Damon. You are 100% right. And I think that's something that's kind of go flying under the radar a little bit going into this weekend. Jose, I mean, make the pick, man. I mean, AJ McKee, more than a 3-1 favorite on over Patricio on some sportsbooks. We've already seen him run through this guy once. He's ice cold. He says he's going to let Pitbull get to the second round this time. I love that line. Are people sleeping here on Patricio? Like, where are you? How do you see this playing out?
It's one of those. The first fight was so quick, and AJ was so dominant. Like, let's not forget, the man essentially knocked out and submitted Patricio Pitbull in the same round. So he basically is already 2-0 against the greatest Bellator fighter of all time. At the same time, though, Patricio Pitbull is still a top 10 featherweight in the world. He is an undersized featherweight. I haven't seen him for years. He could have been the first triple champion with if he dropped down to bantamweight, I think. But I think he is being severely overlooked. I think he is absolutely a spectacular fighter. I think he would give a lot of fighters in the UFC, PFL, one, any promotion problems. I just think AJ McKee is the second, maybe third best featherweight. I'm going to put in third best featherweight in the world behind Volkanovski and Max Holloway. I want to see those three fight at some point. Whether I don't care what promotion they're in. I just want to see them fight. I think AJ McKee is in his physical prime. He's never really had any severe – he's had one severe injury that he's actually got to completely recover from. I think the pandemic – he was the only one that the pandemic benefited because, remember, didn't he hurt his knee and then his fight got canceled? He got like a year and a half of like – rehab to recover before his fight against Pitbull, or who was it? Who did he beat when he came back? I can't even remember. That's how long ago that fight was. So, but yeah, AJ McKee is the man. I think he's the third best featherweight in the world, and I just think he has more tools to win, and I think he's going to go 3-0 against Patricio Pitbull.
Jed, I mean, what do you think here? Are you in agreement with Jose? Right now, it seems like this the narrative that's sort of developing here is AJ McKee, future two-division champion. He's kind of trying to end the Pitbull legacy is more or less what he said this week. Go back up to 155 and get that second belt from the Pitbull brothers, the other Pitbull brother, I should say. Who are you picking this weekend? Do you feel like that's sort of the road here that AJ's looking at?
I think that's the road. I am picking AJ. I think the odds are close to right, maybe could even go up a little bit more because it's 3-1. If they fought four times, I would pick AJ to probably win all four of them. So, you know, there's that. There's one thing. There's one minor caveat that probably won't happen, but I just want to put it out there because it would be the best thing that's happened in MMA all year. Ooh, because I believe that I'm correct in saying that AJ McKee is currently – has fought out his existing contract and is currently beholden only to the champions clause in Bellator. If I'm wrong, please correct me, but I believe that's right. And if so, a loss here would immediately let him free of this to pursue other endeavors.
I'm listening.
And so you can lose in a lot of ways in MMA. You can go get knocked out and lose, or you can walk into the cage and as soon as the fight starts, bend over and tap three times on the mat. And that is a concession and a loss, which would, by definition, remove the belt from him and free him up to pursue potentially more lucrative ventures elsewhere. Probably won't happen, but I've said for a long time, Nate should do that in the UFC so he can go box Jake Paul, just whoever they say, fight. I will fight anyone. I'll fight Francis Ngannou. Sweet. 1, 2, 3. I am gone. It would be the most gangster thing in the world. It would be funny as all hell, and I hope that that's what happens tomorrow night. It would be my favorite thing.
AJ McKee's got that O on his record, man. That O means too much to him. He's not going to do something like that. Also, I feel like that fits
John
much
Jones
more with
has
the
a
Diaz brand.
His record. Does anyone care about that? No. And
oh,
the
yeah.
Way
oh.
He gets it.
Whoa. People, if John Jones was undefeated, the way that he would have been able to be marketed would have been so vastly different. Like, you know that's true. It's silly. But if Alexander Volkanovski was 25-0 right now rather than fought some random dude at welterweight a long time ago, like, this is all very different.
I think the Volkanovski one is true, but the Volkanovski was like a real loss even though it's a welterweight. If AJ's loss is him tapping out to avoid a contract dispute from some draconian laws about how contracts work for champions, I think it's totally fine, and it would be the most gangster thing. Frankly, I think that would actually do worlds to get him over more and more well-known, because if he does that, that's for sure the only thing we're talking about next week.
Well, I am nothing if not an agent of chaos, so I'm here for any and all chaos. Damon, make the pick. What do you think of this crazy conspiracy Jed's thrown out? Just let's throw it to you.
I'll say this. I you know, it's funny, and I've never said it vocally, but I'll say it now. Jed, I've actually had that theory for a long time. Like, why not just walk in, tap the canvas, walk away? You're done. And Nate Diaz, I agree. That's probably what Nate Diaz should do. He probably should just say, yeah, give me Hamzat. Walk in, tap the canvas,
sure
leave.
Sure do it.
The only reason I don't think AJ will do it, though, is because I do know that undefeated record means a lot to him. You know, he said it numerous times to me. He said it to a lot of people. He wants to retire undefeated. I know, you know, the chances of that happening are pretty slim. We have a very long list of fighters who all say they want to retire undefeated and they never do. Ronda Rousey wanted to do it. There's a lot of people who say they want to do it and they don't do it. But so I think that does mean something to him, and I don't think he would ever want to lay down for Pitbull. Like, I know that's not the way maybe it would be portrayed, but I just don't think he would ever do that. So I don't think he will. That being said, I think he wins. I don't know if it'll be as quickly as last time, but I think it will be convincing, whether it's a submission or another knockout. I think he does win. I think he's just got a lot of size, a lot of reach, a lot of power. I like Pitbull, and I agree with Jose, too. Pitbull could be a guy who maybe even be better suited for bantamweight. But I think he wins this fight, and then I think he goes up, he beats his brother. And again, I don't know how much this is going to continue to extend his contract, but the Pitbull family is going to really, really, really not like the name AJ McKee coming soon, because I feel like he is going to be a two division champion. Probably, well, based on Bellator timing, he'll be the Bellator two division champion by like 2025, by the way they schedule him. But in theory, he could be the two division champion before the end of the year.
If he's still fighting in Bellator in 2025, we should all riot. That'll just be awful.
I'm just saying, based on Bellator scheduling, they'll probably wait like another year and a half to give him his next fight.
It's possible. It's possible, and we should all be furious by it.
I'm making unanimous once again. I mean, I think AJ McKee is just one of the top three featherweights in the world. Like, I think you can have Volkanovski, Holloway, and him in some order with Volk as the number one, but the other two are interchangeable almost at this point. Like, I would be fascinated to see how he'd stack up against those guys, and it's unfortunate that we can't see that yet, but it does feel like it's kind of going to come soon, whether it's at 45 or 55, so we'll see. But I do think this is going to be another AJ McKee weekend. Let's move on, and let's hit down this co-main event, because Corey Anderson, Vadim Nemkov. Jose, you led off the top with this. You mentioned it. Light heavyweight tournament finals, $1 million on the line, but also kind of low-key stakes for someone having a potential claim to being the number one light heavyweight in the world with the way all this has played out. Like, Corey Anderson's already, frankly, like, beaten Glover Teixeira pretty handily on the short notice not too long ago. So that's out there. Throw it to you straight. I mean, are you buying what Bellator's selling here? Do you like where we ended up with this whole lightweight heavyweight tournament?
Yeah, I think Corey Anderson created a lot of buzz when he hopped over from the UFC to Bellator. He was coming off that KO loss to Jan Blachowicz. And I think we can all agree that he probably deserved the title fight before that, after he beat Johnny Walker at Madison Square Garden. And then I think he kind of ruffled the UFC's feathers a lot, so they didn't give it to him. They gave him Jan. He got knocked out. And then he made a lot of he's created a lot of storylines and narrative when he jumped over from the UFC to Bellator, because he was still one of those top five light heavyweights in the world. And if he had won maybe one or two more, he's probably fighting for the light heavyweight championship over there. But he made a lot of noise, and then he beats Melvin Manhoef, who Melvin Manhoef is like a legitimate terrifying human being in or outside of the cage. And then he knocks out the guy that I can't pronounce. I'm very sorry. You got a lot of letters that don't really ever appear next to each other in an American dictionary. He was kind of like, I think Corey Anderson did a good job selling that fight, because no one knew who he was, and he had a really impressive record. So he's like, I'm taking this fight. I have a high chance of losing, and no one has heard of this guy. Still took the fight, and then he beats Ryan Bader in less than a minute in Phoenix, Ryan Bader's hometown. So, and then, as I said, Vadim Nemkov is basically the heir apparent to Fedor Emelianenko, just a horrifying human being with dynamite in his hands. It says maybe 2-3 words total in an interview, and we all just eat it up. So I don't have a problem with how this ended, especially because Corey and Vadim are just so polar opposite in their personalities and their fighting styles. I'm very much looking forward to this fight. That being said, I think this is the hardest fight to pick of the three we're probably picking between the UFC main event, the Bellator main event, and now the Bellator co-main event. This is really tough. I think this is like 51-49, and whenever that's the case, I side with the champion, so I'm going to pick Vadim Nemkov, who after that could have a legitimate argument is the best 205er in the world.
It's interesting. I mean, Jose, you're not wrong. Like, you and I were both in Phoenix for that fight against Ryan Bader between Corey Anderson. Knocked him out. Like, that's not even an outcome I think a lot of us expect, is Corey Anderson just steamrolling him in less than a minute or whatever it was. It really quieted that crowd, and they were very unhappy about it. I mean, Jed, man, when you look at Corey Anderson, he's been very unstoppable looking in Bellator, right? Like, he's finishing everyone. He's cutting promos left and right. Are you a believer in this whatever 2.0 version we're getting from this guy? Or do you feel like this is the same Corey Anderson with just a few new lines in different competition?
I don't know if I'm a believer. I have him ranked as the number three light heavyweight in the world. So to some extent, I guess I am. I think me and Damon have gotten into it about Corey Anderson and me thinking that he's not that good. But the world is. Sometimes not being all that good still means you're better than everybody else in a division that is rancid. And that's kind of where we're at. Like, I think it's very possible Corey Anderson is the best light heavyweight in the world. It's really a shame that that's the case, but so it is. But the reality is, if either of these men win this fight convincingly, I'm probably putting them as the top light heavyweight in the world. Like I said, for me, it's number two versus number three. I do have Jiří Procházka as the number one light heavyweight in the world right now. But, you know, a convincing win either way will do a lot for me as far as how it goes. If it's a nip-tuck battle, probably leave things the same. But, you know, Corey has a clear win over the current UFC light heavyweight champion, which I don't think you can discount, even though it's 4 years ago. I would certainly favor him in a rematch there. And so I don't know. I don't know if that makes me a believer or not, as I guess. Like, I still think he's not all that good. I just think this division is terrible, and he's better than most, if not all of it, because it's really bad. And he is certainly improving. I do think his improvements are real. I don't know. I don't think I would take this Corey Anderson versus like prime or near prime Daniel Cormier. Like that's kind of where I'm at.
That's an atrocious matchup for Corey.
And that's sort of it. Like, I just feel that 205 is in a bit of a lull. I do think Corey Anderson is getting better, and he's probably better than I rag on him, but it's funnier for me to make fun of him. So he's better than I give him credit for, but I think that he is close to where he was previously. The division is just bottomed out. And so, you know, cream rises in that situation. So I guess I'm a believer in context, but I'm still not like a fundamental believer that Corey Anderson is going to forge a new destiny for light heavyweights and be the standard by which all of them should aspire to be.
Well, you had Jose picking Nemkov. Who are you siding with?
I'm going to take Nemkov. I actually totally agree with him in everything. I think it's a really close fight. I will be interested to see if Nemkov can get any grappling going against Anderson, who's obviously a very good wrestler. How that plays will be a lot. I do think on the feet, Nemkov is maybe a little trickier, can kick a little more. I don't know. I'm really interested to see how it works out, frankly. I'm going to side with Nemkov, but I would not be at all surprised if Corey Anderson beats him.
Damon, let's go to you, man. I mean, Jed laid it out perfectly. This light heavyweight division right now is a little bonkers, if we're being honest. Like, it just kind of doesn't make a lot of sense. At this point, like, the Glover being champion has really thrown a wrench into all of this for I think in terms of rankings and matchmaking and a lot of this. Who do you side with on this? Who you pick? And is there a chance for you that whoever wins this is going to be your number one light heavyweight in the world?
Listen, I'm siding with Corey Anderson. Jed's right. I have been the defender of Corey Anderson for quite a while now, and I continue to be so, and I will continue to be so. I think he did get a bit of a raw deal in the UFC. Of course, he lost to Jan Blachowicz. No shame in that. Jan's the top guy and a former champion in his own right. So no shame in losing that. And we can't forget, granted, it was years ago, but he did maul Jan in their first fight. Granted, again, it was like, 6 years ago, but he did. I think Corey got a lot of weight off his shoulders going to Bellator, getting away from kind of the toxicity of what he had in the UFC. Getting away from always constantly wanting to prove himself to Dana White and get the attention. And he just never was a very highly respected fighter. And, part of that's based on his own performances. He had some ugly losses in there and all that kind of stuff. But I think he's looked great lately. I do like Vadim Nemkov a lot. I think he's an incredible fighter, but he's had some moments where I'm kind of like, oh man, that's why it's been hard for me to continue to ride with Nemkov, because there are those moments, like Phil Davis a couple times, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know if I picked this guy to be the best guy in the world. At moments, he has flashes of it, but there's a pretty consistent line on Corey Anderson. And one thing that Jed said I do agree with is I think Corey's getting better. I think he's actually stronger now. He's got more knockout power. He's established a pretty strong jab. We know his wrestling's there. His ground and pound is really solid. And I just think he's got confidence right now. I think that's a big difference. He's got confidence. So I like Corey Anderson to win this fight. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout. I don't know if he's going to go out there and knock out Vadim Nemkov. I could see him getting a late finish, because Vadim has kind of been a guy who's had some, he's gone five rounds, but I think Corey could push the pace on him and finish him late. Corey's got incredible cardio. He really does push a pace. He just wore out Glover Teixeira in their fight. Granted, that was three rounds, but he just wore him out in that fight. And I think he could do the same thing to Nemkov here, maybe get a fourth round finish. And if he wins this fight for at least the next 6 weeks, I think Corey Anderson is the best light heavyweight in the sport. And I say 6 weeks because if Jiří Prochazka goes out and does what Jiří Prochazka does and he finishes Glover Teixeira, he's probably going to be number one again. But if Glover wins, and I think Glover can win that fight, hard to argue that, Corey did truck him pretty hard when they fought. So for 6 weeks, Corey Anderson could be the best light heavyweight in the sport.
I think I'm right there with you. Honestly, like I everything, Jed, you said earlier about Corey Anderson 2.0, whether this is real or not, and sort of the weirdness of this division, all of that rings true for me. But I do believe somewhat. I mean, this, when you hear him speak, it feels like a man who just feels a lot lighter in his life, right? Like he just feels like he doesn't have some sort of weird weight looming over him. He obviously had a very contentious relationship with the UFC, or just the way that he sort of viewed the UFC and what they were pushing him to do of you can't be this wrestler. And him just talking about feeling like he wouldn't be able to progress in this division unless he became more exciting. And it really messed with his head and all of this. I'm a believer now with where Corey Anderson is in his life, his confidence, all of that. I think he can go out there and actually put on a really impressive performance, and there will be he is Bellator's best chance. Let's say that he is Bellator's best chance to have an actual claim to having the number one guy in a respective division in this sport. And who knows how long that'll last, because I agree with you, Damon. I have Jiří Prochazka number one right now at light heavyweight with the weird way this division is. If he goes out there and beats Glover Teixeira convincingly, I think I would keep him there. Absolutely. But Corey Anderson has a chance, man. And I'll side with you on that. That is my pick as well. Casey.
Jump on that bandwagon. There's room. There's room.
Let's do it, baby. All right. We have now hit the top three fights of the weekend. Casey, my man, let's get you in here. Let's hear from the peeps. Let's see what's on people's mind. And by the way, all accepting any and all questions about the best day in NBA team in the whole world before we start this revenge tour 2022, baby. Let's go.
The Boston Celtics?
I would gladly take the Celtics, baby. We beat them in five or six.
We talking Sprott's ball? All right.
Sorry, all right. Mr. 3024. Some of us watch other sports.
All right, who we go? What we got here? We already talked about that. Here we go.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
All right, this one's coming from Matt Maggio, who says, what are the chances the winner of Luque versus Muhammad fights Shamayev, knowing Colby Covington is historically hard to book? We actually already addressed this a little bit, but anybody else want to jump in here? I think there's a 50-50 shot, if we're being honest.
I think it's going to be I think Colby Covington is going to fight Colby Covington is going to fight Khamzat Chimaev on ABC in July, probably in Texas. That's just my assumption.
That's certainly what they want.
Do you think those two gentlemen would take a fight in a main event without any pay-per-view points? Or Chimaev and Colby?
Colby already did it. Yeah, Colby will do it, but only after he makes a fool out of himself, because that's his preferred method. He likes to corner Dana White at a blackjack table and then Dana punk him, and then he'll do the thing that the UFC wants to do.
Yeah, like Colby already went down this road with the Masvidal fight. He didn't get pay-per-view points. They're not going to give it to him now after he's already accepted it once.
Did he just admit to that? Did Masvidal?
Colby Covington said three times in three different press conferences on MMA Fighting's YouTube page that he's not getting press pay-per-view points for against Masvidal.
And Masvidal did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Masvidal didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Hey, man. Leverage. It's all about leverage in this game.
We're using weird and Colby comments in this sentence.
And Colby apparently doesn't have a whole lot, so yeah.
This one's coming from Suave Rico Suave. He says, with AJ McKee saying he's, quote, just not that impressed with Volkanovski, and stating if they were to fight, it's a bad matchup for Volk. If they could fight now, surely it's a bad matchup for AJ. And that's his question. What do you guys think?
I don't care. It's not going to happen. Like, if the fight's not going to happen, I don't give it any mental. It doesn't take up space in my brain. Like, that fight is not going to happen until one of them signs the other one. Then I'll be like, oh, he's wrong. Like, Volkanovski is the best featherweight in the world. He's really effing talented. Might be the best fighter in the world. So AJ just might be second. But again, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
I just hate when people say this. Like, I wasn't impressed. Well, that's dumb. Like, that's just dumb. Like,
especially on something that was so obviously impressive, right?
Like, yeah, it was obviously hateful. Like, you can just be honest. Like, it's a lot cooler if you're just like, yeah, man, that was a hell of a performance. I still think I'm better than him, but like, you don't have to try and no sell him when you're obviously full of garbage. Like, that's if he truly believes he truly wasn't impressed, then he's a moron. And that's all that there is to it. Like,
what did you hear his breakdown of it, though? AJ's breakdown?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, I thought when AJ broke it, when it was more than just a quote, I thought he went into a little bit more. I still don't like it, what he said, But I'm not impressed. It's taken slightly out of context because he did elaborate a lot more. He said he left himself wide open for count or whatever. He said, say AJ was a great fight. I mean, Volkanovski is a great, great fighter, though.
I think Volkanovski has fought four straight fights four differently depending on his opponents, and he knew he was not in any sort of danger against the Korean Zombie. So why not take those risks knowing you're not going to get hurt? Like, it's just that's why Volkanovski is so good. He's just a completely different person every time.
And he wanted to get a win. Like, he wanted to get a stoppage. Like, it's just kind of a garbage thing that I think even if he explained better, it's just a dumb thing to say. You can just be like, yeah, I thought that there were some weaknesses, but he's still a great fighter. You don't have to say I'm not impressed.
And let's just say he didn't have the cute French accent like GSP had.
That's a great point.
It just doesn't sound as cute. That's all.
You get some leeway.
AJ's an incredibly talented dude, but I've never agreed with like tearing down an opponent for the sake of trying to make yourself look better or whatever. Like, I don't understand that. Like, if Volkanovski, I understand, like, I and AJ said this to me too. AJ thinks Max Holloway is the guy and he wants to fight Max Holloway. That's his dream fight. I understand all that. But at the same time, like, Volkanovski's the champion. He has two wins over Max Holloway. If you want to be the best guy in the world and say you're the best guy in the world, you're coming to the UFC, it goes through Volkanovski. So I really don't understand saying you're not impressed with him when he is impressive. We've all been impressed by Alexander Volkanovski. Say you're impressed and just say you'll beat him. That's better because you think he's an incredible fighter and I'll still beat him. That would be the better statement.
I would say, I do think that AJ presents I would not pick anyone over Volk. I've been driving that train for as long as Volk's been around, basically. I think I'll pick him in the three match with Max very easily. I think AJ is at least the kind of guy who presents the problems that could upend Volk. Namely, he has hyperviolence in him, and I don't think you can win a long game against Volk, but I do think you can catch him. You know, he almost got caught by Ortega. That's the way to do it, and AJ can do that. I also think Volk is probably just going to have AJ figured out before they step in the cage. But AJ should super not want Max. I think Max puts a hurting on him. Max has all sorts of problems for AJ as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's why he wanted Max, because I think he does feel Max is the toughest fight out there. But it's cool.
Well, I think Max Holloway.
Not going to matter anytime soon.
Don't matter, yeah. Yeah, man.
Max Holloway absorbed 1,000 punches in his career, and if you're going to fight him, it should be probably in the next year or so. Because, like, Yair Rodriguez almost beat him.
I've been saying that for literally 3 years, and his chin is still impervious somehow. I don't understand it.
All right.
All right, this one's coming from our good friend Scott McCrate. He says, if Pico wins, do we get to see him fight a top five opponent next? It's a good question. I mean, this Aaron Pico fight was supposed to be someone else, right? It was supposed to be Kennedy.
Yeah,
that would have been a really interesting test.
Great fight, yeah. It's just
that would have been a really great fight.
It's a bummer for Pico.
It's just kind of one of those things. This is what we ended up with. What do you guys think?
Probably.
I mean,
guess.
I think you have to because
rankings.
They abandoned the let's just throw him to the wolves plan and started kind of feeding him to, like, you know, slowly feeding him to better and better guys. I'm still an Aaron Pico believer. I think he's still incredibly talented. I don't know if he'll be champion, because that's still going to be a tough road to either go through, like, an AJ McKee or even a Patricio Pitbull. But, you know, I think getting, like, what was the fight we just saw? Was it Mads Burnell and Adam
Borges? The rematch against Borges is the one.
Mads
Burnell. Like, Mads Burnell lost. Give him Mads Burnell and see how he does, and then kind of go from there, because Borges is supposed to get the title shot. Something like that. Like, I think that's doable.
Yeah. Well, if you're going off of Bellator rankings, Aaron Pico is what, 4? So there's only 2 names above him that aren't in the title fight on Saturday night, and that is Borges and Burnell. So those are the answers.
Dude, do the Borges thing for an interim belt, because after AJ beats Patricio, he's going to go up to lightweight to get Patricio in. Just do it for an interim. That seems like that's the way to go.
Well, you know, you're following logic. We'll see if Bellator actually follows logic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fair. None of these promotions follow any logic.
All right, let's take a couple more and then we'll get out of here.
All right.
This one's coming from Jaden Kelly. He says, will Bilal Muhammad consistently be able to take down Vicente Luque? I mean, that's really the question of the fight, right? Like, that's kind of one of the major keys coming into this. What do you guys think?
Probably not.
I think the key word in that sentence is consistently. Will he be able to take him down once or twice? Probably, but great. If you take him down once, keep him down or continue to take him down. So consistently, no, but I do think he'll score at least maybe 1 or 2.
I wonder, too, whether he can actually hold him down, because Vicente Luque is a scrambler, man. Like, that dude is a shifty character. If you're getting him down, he's usually getting right back up.
That's the big thing to me is if you look at the stats, you know, questionable. Bilal's takedown like efficiency is pretty low, and that's even coming off he took Wonder Boy down like 20 times off of 21 shots or something like that.
Also, for nothing, Vicente Luque has some pretty impressive defensive submissions. Yep. Like, you shoot on him, he's probably going to be shooting for all kinds of submissions immediately. Same. So good luck with that.
Putting that neck in danger.
I
think Jose's right. Consistently is a problem, especially because Luque can get up.
I mean, he can get him down. Bilal's really good as a wrestler against the cage, and I think that's where his biggest advantage, if he's trying to slow Vicente Luque down, is push him against the cage and try to work from there. Because you do not want to be in open space with Vicente Luque. That's just a recipe for disaster. But as we've all said, Vicente's not afraid of the takedown, because he has such an incredible submission game. you know, that's what, you know, when Tyron Woodley, you know, when he was just trading punches with Tyron Woodley and Tyron Woodley finally kind of dove on him, he just grabbed onto the Darce choke and, you know, did it that way. And he did that to Michael Chiesa too. That's, you know, you do it enough times, he'll catch you. And so can he do it? Sure. Can he do it and stay out of danger? No, because I just think Vicente Luque is that good.
Yeah.
I think what Damon said, yeah, because Luque, we're acting like this is the way to beat Luque.
Yeah.
Hold him down. Yeah.
Than trying to throw hands with the man.
Well, trying to get Bilal killed, we already saw Bilal try
and throw hands with him.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, yeah, from Bilal's, but his skill set, yeah. I just, it's a really tough path for victory for Bilal.
Yeah. All right, let's get one more last one, and then we'll get out of here.
There's other fights, gentlemen.
There are.
Oh, I mean, what Joseph Bosa says, what is the under the radar fight for each card? It's Huggy Boy. It's Chris Barnett. It's Beast Boy. Like, what are we doing? How do we go an hour 15 without mentioning Chris Barnett? That man is a gem, a joy, and we should all appreciate him. What do you guys think?
How is he on the prelims?
Dude, that's a great
question. How is he on the prelims? He's like in the prelims too. That card.
Dude, they put any heavyweight as the co-main event for Fight Nights, and yet Barnett. What?
Because Damon, they have
no offense to the guy. To the
God's honest truth.
Lots of offense. Those guys should not be co-main.
A lot of offense. The co-main event, neither man has a wiki page, which again, you can just go make one of those. Like, you could do that yourself. And they are both have never fought in the UFC before. They're both contender series guys.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how deep we were going to go in the preview show today, so I did some research and I looked them up because I seriously had never heard of either of them before about 20 minutes ago. And I looked them up. I was like, neither one of them have fought in the UFC. They're both contender series winners from this year. Or yeah, I was like, are you kidding me? So yeah, it's
a prospect,
just beyond comprehension that Chris Barnett is not on the main card, much less not the co-main event, because this card beyond the main event is like, I think it's dumpster fire is an insult to the rest. Like, that's an insult to dumpster fires.
I mean,
Hey, even Anderson Silva and Brock Lesnar didn't have UFC fights, and they debuted in the co-main event. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Oh,
let's throw
Greg Hardy in there too. He debuted in the co-main event as well.
You can't argue with Jose.
He went out in the co-main event, wasn't he?
Jose, you are the encyclopedia. Without looking at the card right now, can you name both of the guys in the co-main event and actually pronounce their names right now? Can you do it? Because I know I can. I wouldn't lie to you and say I could.
I know Carbajalio only because he was like tweeting a bunch of stuff, and I know his opponent has a bunch of letters that aren't ever next to each other in the American dictionary.
Kadzio Moradziev.
There you go.
There you go. Look at that. Also, let's just give a last second shout out to Drakkar Close finally coming in here. Is this his first fight back since that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, also, it is.
To answer Joey Bosa here, because for the Bellator thing, Kyle Crutch from Michael Lombardo is like a pretty good fight that's buried on their prelims.
Also, freaking the rest of Manir Lazet. Manir Lazet is fighting on the main card of the UFC card too. Handsome boy Manir Lazet. I'm always excited when he throws down.
There you go.
Who's he fighting, Jose?
Let's end it on that.
The co-main event should have been Chris Barnett versus William Knight. That should have been the co-main event. Just have them just keep running into each other over and over. That's
I mean, that seems awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wouldn't do that.
Just a couple of big boys slapping meat.
Big boys slapping meat is all you ever want. Look, I said it on BTL. I'm going to say here. If you guys have anything else to do this weekend, family, do that and tune into MMAfighting.com because you don't need to watch this stuff. We'll do it for you.
I mean, at least point the people back to
it. Watch the Bellator card. Watch the Bellator card.
I said tune into MMAfighting.com.
You know what? Watch what you want to watch, people. Don't listen to Casey. Don't listen to Jed. Just do what you want to watch.
Don't listen to Jose and do what you want. Listen to us. Jeez.
Before we're out, Jose, show us some Bobby Hill tattoo here.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on?
Where we at? Wait, hold on.
You know, nice little Akatsuki Bobby Hill I tried to get it on my leg. I was like, can you put this on my leg? And my tattoo artist is like, no, you want people to see this. We're putting it right out on the front. I'm like, all right, let's do it. So we slapped it on there for everyone to see for the rest of my life.
Look at that. That's a prime time placement, man. You're rocking with King of the Hill for the rest of your life. Look at that.
And you can't really see, but they even got the shining down red eyes in there, too. Shout out to James Tran. Full circle tattoo.
There we go. This has been your early Thursday afternoon weekend preview. We appreciate you guys for joining us. My name is Sean Oshadi. We have Damon Martin over there. Jose Young's down there. Jed Meshew down there. And, of course, the undefeated EKC Layton, man in the boards. We'll be back Saturday night after UFC. So join us then. We'll be hitting everything from the weekend. Bellator, UFC, hitting it all. It'll be good stuff. So, hey, stop by. Join us. Let's have some fun. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week. Have a fun weekend. Enjoy the fights. And we'll see y'all later. Appreciate you rocking with us. Happy birthday, okay?
It's not my birthday.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.